Welcome to Expedition Self on Om Times Radio with lifelong learner, entrepreneur, and creator of the worlds of Expedition Self, Sam Parado. Sam shares 4 decades of studying, guiding, and teaching how to go inside so we can build an incredibly powerful, dynamic, and validating relationship with the self. Expedition Self is laced with stellar, unexpected insights about what it means to be human. Expedition Self is a masterful, inclusive, transparent, and down-to-earth on-air conversation that invites you to seek real-time answers to your real-life exploration while gaining command around the language, the interrelationship, and the ways of being so critical to evolving and creating your most fulfilled life. Listen now and ignite your self-development process with Sam Parado.
Well, hello, and thank you for joining me today. Our topic is conscious parenting. And I have to say, this is one of my favorite topics because it touches everyone. We're all a child of someone, and many of us are parents of other someones. And it's everything. We're shaped by it. Our hearts are totally moved by it. And it's the kind of thing you can never really get right. Right? Because it's the amalgamation of every single human piece of beingness that exists within us, because it's the source of where we come from. So to state the obvious, it is the biggest source of our being in life. That's what we're going to talk about today. On a couple of other starting notes, I just want to mention that everything I talk about has something to do with going inside. And that's what my show is all about each week, giving you a way to think about how to build that inner relationship with yourself by getting more conscious of the small and hidden thoughts and feelings that most of us have been taught to put on the shelf and ignore. My life is 24/7 to have that relationship. So my hope is that by listening in over time, your thoughts will start to include a new way of viewing life and yourself in it. All right, I'm going to take a breath here. So also, for those of you who are new to my show, I really want to encourage you to call in and share your thoughts or ask questions. You can simply listen, but everyone wins when we get to hear about other people's experiences, and it makes it more fun for me too, because then I don't have to be the only one talking for the whole hour. So here's the phone number. You're going to call in at 202-570-7057. And what I was going to say is that the station producer will answer your call, and he'll let me know that you're waiting to come on air. So if it also helps if you turn down the volume on your computer, because you're going to be able to hear the show through the phone when you actually call in. So why do I want to talk about this parenting thing? Well, it's because to me, parenting is the hardest, most challenging thing we'll ever do. And many of the parenting ideas, they don't really free us up to really understand what's possible to gain out of the experience. I mean, the obvious is there, right? It's incredible, and all the love and learning that we get, but there's more that can happen. And then the other thing is that being more conscious as a parent, it helps our children grow up to be more powerful and engaged and self-connected, because they have more skill to go after their own personal fulfillment rather than succumb to that hamster wheel of eating and sleeping and working and surviving. You know, they're able to learn how to be with and stay with themselves. The other thing is, I'd like to free people from the idea that they can get it right. Right? So that you can actually learn and celebrate the whole of parenting. And I'm going to talk a lot about that today. And lastly is to give you a way to pay attention to your parenting, so you do actually get the most out of the growth experience as a parent. So, okay, here we are. Before we dive into the meat of the conversation, I always like to start with this idea of enoughness, that wherever you are, no matter how it's gone for you, in this case as a parent, we want to appreciate what we've brought to life and what we've brought to the experience, what we've given of ourselves. Because the fact is, we give a lot. We show up every day and we stretch and we try to be what we think is needed to make our lives work. And it's so easy, right, to focus on what we're not, what we should have been. And there's no question, guilt is laced all over the parenting experience. So we always want to begin from a place of appreciating our humanity, what it takes to show up, and certainly what it takes to be a parent. It's a rough job, I tell you. So the other thing I want to mention, and I do this in each show because I think it's, you know, there's a lot of language that gets thrown around, and sometimes I'll talk about things and they'll be confusing or the words won't make sense. So that's part of this idea of getting to be in the conversation week after week, is slowly but surely the words will make sense and your psyche is going to begin to tease out the meanings or the alternate ways to think about you and being with yourself. So your subconscious is definitely listening and it doesn't really need to understand the words. It's just going to like let them in. So here we go. Let's settle in. Allow your mind to span across your lifetime and begin to try on the idea that parenting is, in fact, an incredibly unconscious. Wow, it's unconscious, right? A couple of years ago, when I was working on this constant dilemma I face, which is how to help someone be motivated to grow, I realized that there's one surefire way that will have a person try on an unwanted idea about who they're being and how that plays out. And it is always, always tied to their desire and commitment to being a better parent. You know, their hearts, the place where they'll stretch beyond how they know themselves, is for their children. And if there's something that needs to be looked at within themselves, it'll oftentimes only happen if they can see the impact it'll have on their kids. It's really interesting. It's kind of like everything else just fades away in life. The job, the vacations, like all the rest of the stuff, because when it comes to our kids, they've got our hearts. So parenting is like the great equalizer, the eternal humbler, the human beings you'll go to the mat for and lay your ego down because they matter that much to you. And you'll put the facade away because you know at some level they see the real you. So parenting is the one place you kind of know that you won't be able to hide. And it matters more than anything in the world when your kids really get who you are. So I want to reassure you that you truly, absolutely, unequivocally cannot get it right. So that's where we're starting today, is you can't get parenting right. I do know that we all spend a lot of time still trying to do it, but I don't think I can say it enough. It's like the more we lay that down, the more we consider that that's right, we can't get it right, the more we're going to get the freedom to be the parent and have the learning experience that we're actually, you know, deserving for ourselves. Right? So you have to take the case that whatever it is, no matter how imperfect you may think it is, that it's exactly what it's supposed to do and be. And that means that everything that happens inside of it and because of it is perfect. Right? So the assessing that we do, we're talking about starting to turn that off and take the case that we can't get it right. It's a grand myth we all live with, and we perpetuate it, that it even matters that we get it right, as if that's what makes the day fulfilling or that's what really fills our heart. So when parents say to me, I don't want them to grow up and have issues because of me. Well, I say, and I kind of prepare them for it. I say, well, of course they're going to have issues because of you. They're supposed to. You're that important. You're bringing that much of yourself to it. You're the original place that they learn about relationship. They've got you as a parent for all that you're going to give them that they want and like, and all that you're going to give them that they don't want. You're going to help them grow and evolve as much as they're going to help you. So that's an example of some of what we're going to talk about today in this conversation around parenting. And it might make you uncomfortable as we go through it, but I feel like at the end of the conversation, we're going to be able to talk a little bit about how you can bring yourself in a more conscious way and what kinds of things you can think about. So I think these ideas make a huge difference in getting more freedom for you as a parent. Even though along the way you're going to be like, she's just giving me more bad news. She's just telling me more stuff I already know that's hard about parenting. And, you know, you might find yourself shying away from these ideas because, heck, right? We'd rather see parenting as controllable and conscious and intentional. But like I said, it's really not. So let's keep going a little bit. Now, again, I want to give you this phone number if you'd like to call in and join the conversation. It's 202-570-7057. So I think our kids are kind of like the product of our love and our commitment and our effort. They represent the outcome for us of how good we did, even if we try not to make it mean that, right? Because we all kind of know. We don't want to look at our kids as some product of our effort, right? But I feel like whatever you value, you want to see evidence of that in your children. It's like if you value manners and respect, well, then that's what you're going to want in your kids. And if you value freedom of expression and creativity, well, then you're going to find yourself super excited when your children value and exhibit that stuff too. So whatever you believe creates a good citizen or a loving person or a successful life or a survivable life, these are the things you're putting into your parenting, and these are the things your kids are exposed to all the time. So I'm going to take a breath, right? Our kids are validation of who we are as human beings. And since we're all striving to be good at it much of the time and do it right, there's a heck of a lot wrapped up in how they turn out. It's rather huge, like humongous, like ginormous when you think about it. But nonetheless, it's a reality that we have to live with. So knowing we have a personal stake, we feel this enormous, ginormous, humongous sense of responsibility for the future generations of the planet. And I don't think we can help but feel each and every hit that's registered by their sense of self. And, you know, somewhere we secretly hold on to their dreams and hopes that may never come to pass and wish we could personally make it all happen for them. It's a very, very, very big agenda. And beyond all of that, I think it's safe to say we want them to be someone's that we're pleased to be associated with. We want to be able to spend time with them and enjoy it. So I just am going to say it really loud here. It's like, yikes, 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 yikes. And all that gets placed on our kids, and all of that is carried on our shoulders. Double yikes. Is this true for you? Can you feel how much you've got at stake as a parent? Because that's what I'd like you to get in touch with in the beginning of this conversation. How much do you try to get it right? And how often do you feel this weight on your shoulders? And what do you do with it? I'm interested, right? Like, that is the piece that as parents, we're working with day in and day out. So it's a good time to call. If you find yourself thinking, yep, that's me, I definitely do that. I do feel the weight of it, because I'd love to hear how it's going for you as a parent. So here's another idea I'd like you to think about. Now I'm going to set this up, and then when we come back after break, we'll go into it in a little more detail. But I want you to think about the idea that each child is here to help us see that which we cannot see in ourselves. And one of the ways they do that is by reflecting it back to us. So in that reflection, we're actually reconnecting with our own experience at the same age as our child goes through it. So if I have a 12-year-old child, then I've got a 12-year-old. I'm touching and connecting with my inner 12-year-old. So we reconnect with our own experience at the same age as our child goes through it. All right, now we've got our first caller, and that's Susie from Pennsylvania, but I'm going to wait until after break, and then I'm going to bring her on because I want to give her enough time to be able to talk about the subject because I think it's got a lot of pieces to it. So I'm going to go on a little further around this idea of what we're really trying to say here, which is that if your child is five, your unconscious five-year-old is going to be more present. And it's that unconscious five-year-old is going to be in the conversation without you realizing it. And it'll be an aspect of how you relate to your five-year-old. That makes tons of sense, right? That we're inside of our own head, and the way we're trying to close the gap to relate to our child is by accessing that experience that's often unconscious and we don't even really know it. So if you go one more layer about that, think about knowing that every place you haven't yet healed in your journey, that it will definitely be a place that they and you contend with. So whatever you were feeling and living through and however you did it at that age, that's what's going to show up for you as a parent. And it doesn't stop at 21, right? And most of us don't actually remember a lot about each age. So it's going to be a surprise when we run right into it. So we'll see our inner five-year-old in our child who is five. We'll feel like a five-year-old ourselves, not even realize it. We'll have a sense of life and how it's going based on what our five-year-old was feeling when we were five. Is this making some sense? It's like that's going on behind the scenes when you're actually parenting. So on that note, when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about what you do with that. And we're going to open with talking to Susie from Pennsylvania.
A conscious lifestyle for a mindful life. Om Times Radio. IOM FM.
Came across someone struggling with hunger. How would you recognize them?
By their clothes.
Their age.
The way they speak.
Hunger can be hard to recognize. Learn why at IamHungerInAmerica.org. Brought to you by Feeding America, 200 Food Banks Strong, and the Ad Council.
Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Connect at omtimes.com. Om Times, creating a more conscious lifestyle.
My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern on Om Times Radio, and we'll explore these topics and so much more on Destination Unlimited.
If you're worried your friend may be struggling, remember, you don't have to be there to be there.
You can say how while you will get a fake tattoo. You can ask with an app if it works for you. You could chat on a game, kick off your flip-flops. You can ask on your couch while you binge watch.
Whatever gets you talking.
Reach out to a friend about their mental health. Learn how you can help at seizetheawkward.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council, American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, and the Jed Foundation.
All right. Well, we are back and we're going to take our first caller of the hour. And Susie, I am interested, if you're on air, what do you think about what it takes to be a conscious parent?
Well, first I will say I love this topic. And if you did it every week, I would be thrilled. I think I have a 21-year-old son. I have one child. And in my adult life, I've learned he's been a mirror for who I am, and I have learned so much about myself from my experience of raising him. And I think and I will say in the early years, I was not conscious. And then I started working on that. And it has completely changed my experience as a parent, and I think his experience of my child, as being my child. And what I'm working on now is I find I have this recurrent pattern where I just have to keep reminding myself, he's not me. He's not me. And trying to allow him to individuate and to see when I have a need, I have to make sure it's need of myself. It's not of him to be this or to do that. And so we are in conversation about that a lot. It's me trying to realize that I don't project on him and want him to do things my way or study something I want him to study in college. And to really just take a step back and let him have his own life. And that's, you know, that's what I want for him more than anything, is for him to be able to be his own, have his own life and run it to his own satisfaction. And so taking a step back is a challenge area for me. Even though I'm aware of it, I'm not, you know, I still keep remind myself and be reminded of it.
Well, I think that's the thing about this idea of consciousness. It's actually about the practice of it. It's not about the achieving, right? That we're, the more we pay attention to how do I stay connected to myself and my own needs and what's really happening in myself. I'm curious, have you been able to see a parallel between whatever age he is and then the age that you, what was going on for you at that age? I realize that wasn't what you got on air to talk about, but I'm kind of curious, okay, given that I teed that up before the break.
Yes. I mean, I could definitely tell you that. I mean, I when he was younger and watching him make friends and you know, I would feel his pain if something didn't go well. And it was really my pain from when I was a child and it didn't go well. So learning to make friends and then even something as silly as I'm a baseball fanatic. And when he started Little League, oh my God, could life get any better than that? And he, it wasn't his thing. It was his mom's thing. And I, you know, I really didn't, I think I, you know, he taught me because he didn't want to play. And he chose never to swing the bat. And as his way of resisting what I was pushing on him, because I loved it. It was a great sport, and I it fulfilled a need for me as a like an elementary school age kid, and something that had me fit in and feel like I, you know, excelled at something. And I, you know, I just was completely blind to that. That wasn't him. And so,
wow.
I mean, but I could.
So you got to live some of that.
Yeah. And I mean, I could march you through. I could take up like 20 years of this conversation with you, stuff I did. So I don't want to do that. But I do understand what you're saying. And the more conscious I am, the more I feel like I learn more about myself. And then I feel like I just think he enjoys me more, you know, as his mom.
Which is a nice thing for sure. Well, I really appreciate you coming on and sharing your experience. I would like to say one more thing before you leave, which is when you started, you said, you know, I wasn't very conscious when he was young. I think that the idea of it, consciousness being something that's an evolving thing, that the idea of even being able to say, I don't think I was so conscious at that time, that that's in and of itself helping us get more ownership and more of a sense of ourselves out of it. So I appreciate you coming and sharing a little bit about your mom experience.
Thank you, Sam.
So have a great day. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
So, okay, I'm going to give you that phone number again for anybody else who might like to call in and join in. The number is 202-570-7057. So I'm really right in this idea that whatever age your child is the age that you're working with inside of yourself. And there's an underlying belief about that, or a foundation, which is that we're supposed to be getting more and more whole, and we're supposed to have an opportunity to reclaim parts of ourselves that we might have missed. Because to me, what consciousness is it's the difference between remembering a phrase from a month of our life and remembering every single minute from an hour of our life. And that's what we're trying to do, right, is become, I think, more mindful, more self-aware, and actually have a deeper connection with our subconscious or unconscious self. So this place of your inner five-year-old is that when you see the evidence of some unowned aspect of yourself reflecting back to you, it's super hard to be with. Because when you see the evidence of it, it doesn't look like it's you. In many ways, it looks like it's them. So, you know, they might be, you know, having some kind of behavioral thing going on, or they don't want to swing the bat, right? So you get to go in and do that, what I would call the work, which is to get honest with yourself about what's really driving your thoughts and your feelings. There's no getting it right in here. I'm stating it again. There's just being, but becoming aware and having thoughts that help you understand what you're living through, it provides a whole different foundation. There's just looking and learning and listening, right? So you might be thinking, how do I get in touch with my inner five-year-old when I'm simultaneously trying to connect with my in-the-flesh child standing before me? You can do it. You can. You just take the case. You just look. You say, well, what's happening for me right now? It's a lot of the inner questions rather than just shutting it all down, right? You want to go inside so that you can truly see what was happening. So when I was five, I cried a lot. I had a lot going on about being lonely, and I started to deal with the idea that I was mortal, that I was going to have an ending, and that caused me to wonder, like, how I fit with other people, because they didn't necessarily, you know, they weren't talking about the things I was thinking about, and they weren't understanding really why I was crying. So when my son was five, I wanted him to belong with others and to fit in and have this sense of connection so he wouldn't feel alone. So I'm not saying it as a value judgment, but my parenting at that time was definitely driven by what I had missed out on as a child, which was really, you know, feeling very deeply understood, and also this idea that other people understood me. So, you know, I hope this is having you, remember I said, go through your lifetime and think about yourself as a parent. See if you can zero in on some moment, some age, that your child was going through something, and see if you can connect with it as we're talking. You know, that's what makes this a more meaningful conversation. Okay, here's another idea. Ready? We tend to think our emotional needs are supposed to be met in some way by our child. Now, Susie referenced that also, where, like, she keeps trying to give more room and give more room for her child to be his own person, right? So the difficult part of this, the dicey part, is that children do actually meet our emotional needs. You know, they need to be loved, to be acceptable, to be worthy, to be seen. Like, so much of that unconditional love that they provide when they're young, it goes straight to our hearts. And it makes us feel like we're the sun and the moon and the stars and everything in between. So here I say, well, we want to try to recognize that we don't want our kids meeting our emotional needs, and yet they're doing it anyway. So I'm certainly not suggesting that you're blocking. It's more, again, that you become aware and attuned to this idea of how they're meeting them, so that you can then think about what you can provide for yourself. So if we take the case that we're not supposed to expect our needs to get met, that we want our children to be freed up to meet their own needs, then that taking that case, it's a tough task right there just to pay attention to that. And what that does is it puts a lot of emphasis on your self-care. It puts a lot of emphasis on making sure you take time for you. You know, I think about some of the conversations I've had with other moms where they were conflicted about, going out for themselves or taking time or being away from their children. And really, at some level, when you talk about it in the context of these emotional needs, it's essential, right? Because without that, without having that space where we're caring for ourselves, we can't help but have it get filled by what our child is actually providing. So not the easiest of truths to see, but super, super, super significant in the realm of bringing more self-awareness to our parenting. Is this something, when you ask yourself, is how do you provide the love for you that you can't give yourself? How do you provide it? Like, what do you do for yourself? That question was kind of funky the way I spoke it. But basically, it's like, what do you do to give yourself the love that they actually provide? So again, it's impossible to provide all of the love we need for ourselves. So we're going to have to keep practicing in there, right? The key is to get conscious so that you're not taking it and not realizing it. I want to mention just another feeling that I think is like one of the big juicy ones that we feel from our children. And that's this experience of being allowed to give. You know, receiving is such a vulnerable place that a lot of us really struggle with receiving. And we like to give, right? Because it makes us feel something that we like to feel. So when we have children, they allow us to give to them. And I'd say, where in life do you notice that you're allowed to give and you get to feel that smushy feeling in your belly that makes your toes curl up as if they're wrapped in a fuzzy, soft blanket? Because that's something to get attuned to and to notice what you get, what the payoff is for when you actually get to give. And of course, the piece on the back end of that is that there's often threads of expectation of what you're going to get back in return. And that's when we're in the soup again, because we inadvertently will rope our kids' sense of self and their power around making us happy or pleasing us or validating who we are. And again, this is how it is. There's a ton of self-responsibility here to being a parent to bring to this experience. So with each teaspoon of new consciousness that you bring around these ideas that I'm talking about, it's a huge, huge step in getting both you and your child a bit more freedom to be together in life. That's the goal, is this being together. So this is a good time, if you're in the conversation and you're finding yourself connecting with what I'm saying, good time to call in. 202-570-7057. So we're going to go on. And I keep thinking in my head, you're thinking, geez, she's just giving me one piece of bad news after another. It's like one more thing to get responsible for. But I promise, in the last segment of the hour, we're going to talk about how that all lifts. So hang in there. So I'm going to give you another one, is that the parent-child dynamic is a total projection machine. It's like all your fears, all your hopes, all your insecurities, everything we're compensating for what we were not or what we didn't get, we're going to try to give it indirectly to our child, right? Anything, any place we feel inadequate, anything we've never gotten good with on the inside, our children become that board, you know, the pushpin board where you put the pins in. They become the place that all gets reflected onto. And so in some ways, that's really helpful because we get to watch ourselves do it, which then helps us see what those places were that we didn't get whole or complete about. Because, you see, we are supposed to get whole in life. And one of the pathways available to us is through our relationship with our kids, because there's so much reflection, there's so much connection, there's so much love. Right? But if we don't bring that consciousness, then we're lessening the wholeness rather than expanding it. I think you could probably say, underneath everything I've said, this is what I hope for, is that you start to realize how much of yourself is at play not just the weight you carry on your shoulders about it, but that it's going on all the time, so that you can bring attention to it. You can bring your ideas to it. You can really want to think about how am I melding with my child, and how am I in some ways not seeing what they're taking on from me? So when I posed the question about what the most challenging thing about staying conscious was as a parent to members of my Facebook group, Life on the Growing Edge, I want to share with you what one mom said. So she said, the most challenging thing about parenting is knowing when to mind my own business. If I rush in, it becomes about me and my fears. And remembering to believe in my son's inner resources and reinforce them is so important. Knowing the recipe for when support is actually needed and when it's not is always so precarious, because finding this balance is something I always have to pay attention to, and it's not easy. I loved what she wrote, because it's just another way that we put words on our own experience of how we try to be conscious and bring ourselves to this idea of parenting. I also want to just stop for a moment here and pause, because remember, you're a child. You've been a child. And so every time you're taking action as a parent, you're in some ways reparenting or getting an opportunity to understand yourself as a child. And so, you know, you're getting a 360-degree view of this experience of being human. So that's why it matters. You're healing, your child's growing, your child's healing, you're growing, you're understanding more about life, you're getting more whole, and in doing all of that, you're creating a basis for a wider, bigger, deeper relationship. So when we come back, I'm going to do just a little bit more bad news about the big job of parenting to help you think about this monumental task you've assumed. I'll see you after break.
The best of holistic, spiritual, and conscious world. Om Times Radio. IOM FM.
Brought to you by CDC and the Ad Council.
With so much loss, you may feel like you can't handle it all. Meditation or other spiritual practices can help you feel more grounded and better able to cope.
Find more self-care and coping tips at coping-19.org.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose: to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
Imagine yourself being transported to India, to the banks of the Ganga and an ashram in Rishikesh. Visualize that you are welcome to satsang with an American sannyasi who shares the wisdom of her guru. Your visualization has manifested. Join Satvi Bhagavati Saraswati for inspiration and transformation every Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern on Om Times Radio.
We've all felt left out. And for people who move to this country, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Okay, we are back. And I promised you a little more bad news about the role and job of parenting. And that's, we're going to start with that idea right now, which is that parenting is a fruit salad you have very little control over. You don't control how it tastes and combines and interacts. You can put ingredients in. You can say, do this and don't do that. And it wouldn't matter, because it's like being thrown in one of those theme park rides that uses centrifugal force to keep you pinned against the wall. There's nothing you can do to try to avoid all the expectation, the projection, the lamentation, and the coordination of being a parent. There's just nothing. It's like going to happen, right? So all you've got to work with is to get more and more conscious so that you can create the conversation and space for your child to individuate and teach you. So I hear this a lot. I'm afraid I'm a bad mom, or I'm bad dad, or I did something that was a bad mom moment. And so as a way of making more freedom, I want to say, okay, hold on. I'm going to do something really controversial. You are a bad mom. You are a bad dad. Like, try on the freedom you can get from letting go of trying to be a good one. Just for a moment. Just think about it. If I take on, that's right, I'm a bad mom or I'm a bad dad, breathe into it. Like, really think about how much you love, how much you give of yourself, and how willing you are to get upside down and confused and feel everything that goes along with being a parent. Okay, so if that's a bad mom or a bad dad, do you see we're reducing it down to some idea of you being a good parent or a bad parent, and your head, when you go there, and I'm not saying you're not going to go there. What I am saying is you can have another way to view it, which is, wow, no, I can take on the idea that I am a good dad and a bad dad. And when I'm all done with that, I am me, right? We have to start debunking this idea whenever we can, because if I'm going to strive to be good, then I'm going to lapse into bad, right? I'm actually setting up my own teeter-totter, my own back and forth there, because it's inevitable, right? And then what freedom does it give my child to be honest? Because they're going to get caught in a double bind because they feel my try. I mean, my son will laugh. He'll say, are you having a bad mom moment? Right? Because it's the only way to debunk it and get it out of the space, because you just are. You just are a parent. And there's this relationship dynamic, and you can commit to looking and learning and that being all there is, but that commitment is everything. That's all there is. That's what matters, right? Is that I'm committed to showing up. And that includes not showing up sometimes, right? It's a commitment to being a student as a parent rather than a righteous know-it-all one who gets it right. And it makes all the difference. Your child who goes along with you as a child when they're dependent is going to grow up and want to be in relationship with their truth of how it actually went for them. So this idea that you can show up not as a good parent and not as a bad parent, but as one who wants to relate and wants to connect, wants to learn the truth, wants to learn about what it was like for them, it's part of them taking back their power and owning their whole self. And it's part of you doing the very same thing. So, okay, now we're still open for callers. It's been kind of a quiet day here, so I'm going to give the number again. It's 202-570-7057. If you're connecting, it's really a great idea to come online and we'll all get to connect with you, right? So here we are. So each child is going to have a different experience. Even if you did everything the same, because they're processing life through their unique lens. Many of you have had more than one child probably really get this, or were siblings. I was an only child, so I kind of don't relate to that piece as much. It's been more part of my learning. So here's the question. We're going to start moving out of the heavy news, the bad news of parenting, which is, how do you put them in a position to learn how to look inward so they can bring that to their inner relationship? Well, I'd like to share a little bit with you about what I did, and also kind of what I've thought about. And that is that when my son was little, he had a little purple velvet chair, and we started from a very young age just putting words on his feelings without me trying to change them. And so what that looked like was, if I wanted to put his toys away and he was angry, you know, he'd say, "I'm angry that you moved my truck." And it was incredible, because I watched him develop words to describe whatever it was that he was connected with. And we didn't use a lot of words. I mean, there were three or four basic emotion words. But this idea of, let's sit in the purple chair and let's actually talk about what's going on. Let's see if we can find some words. Let's see if we can connect. That purple chair, then as he got a little bit older and he got to maybe 5 or 6 or 7, we started to call it the purple room. And so we would have purple room conversations. Those conversations were all about me listening and me sharing and connecting for myself, and then also creating a space where he could do the same. And a lot of times the conversations were about how it was going with the two of us, because one of the things I wanted to learn how to do was how to be respectful to his experience as a child, because I kind of grew up in this idea that children were supposed to be told what to do and directed and you know, put somewhat in some direction or some path that they were supposed to be on. So the purple room for me was to try to figure out how to begin to relate to my son from this place of, he has his own experience, he's learning how to voice his experience, and I'm learning how to listen and hold that space. So I'm saying that my commitment to be a student as a parent, to recognize it's not something to get right, and that I'm supposed to be growing and evolving with him through his childhood and really reclaiming mine. It turned out to be a pretty awesome gift, because it created a neutral place where we could always go and talk about life. And it started to be a place where other kids, like his friends, could actually hang out with, and they could come and talk about what it was like to be in life. And the minute you start having big conversations as kids are moving into their tweens and into their high school years, it seemed like having a safe place to talk about big issues and what they were feeling on the inside and how their brain was working and what they were trying to do with it. It definitely produced a place where they were able to get more and more conscious about what was going on, and they were safe enough to talk about it without it being run through some filter of, this is a good way to think and this is a bad way to think. So I wanted to share with you some parents who've experimented with this idea of how to create a learning space. One parent said, creating this space for sharing feelings expanded my relationship with my son way beyond my expectations, and establishing that was a true gift. You know, isn't that what we all want with our kids, is to be able to have a place where we can talk, where we feel safe with each other, and where we're able to have a sense that we get what's going on for each other, that there's this intimacy and understanding. Now, don't get me wrong. I am not suggesting that you don't have ups and downs with your kids, or you don't get upside down, or you don't lose it. I had lots and lots of those moments, and I know lots of parents that deal with that. It's part of, again, the whole experience of parenting. The key, though, is to have a mechanism where you can actually talk about it without having to be defensive afterwards. A place where you can go into it and say, what was actually happening there for me? So another mom who was working with this idea of the purple room and the purple chair, she said, really letting our kids have their emotional experience and helping them find words to identify it, and then offering if they would like to know what we were feeling, that was a huge pathway to empathy for me and my child. So that's what's possible with everything I set up about all the things that are going on in your parenting experience, is that what you can do is create a vehicle or a pathway or a channel and a basis for being able to talk about all of it, all of it. And the thing about our children is they're here to help us see our blind spots, to see that which we cannot see. So one of the themes of my life is, what is love? I've been working with it since I was little and trying to understand, is that loving? When they said that, was that actually loving? And so when I met my son, I actually kind of thought I had some of it figured out. Arrogant much, right? But I had no idea that I would redefine it, not because of the love I felt for him or like that experience, which was huge, but actually because of his take on the world. and the way he actually processed it. And because of it, he ended up with this wicked sense of humor, and I'd like to joke that I don't have one, but it allowed him to, because of his take on love, which is in some ways felt so much more innocent and open, he's able to play with satire and dark humor and all kinds of interesting dimensions that I would have never even learned about or been interested in or been open to. And so I would say I've learned to laugh and lighten up quite a bit because of him. So my challenges in the realm of being productive or being received in the world, I got to learn about that through his life, but I also got to get more whole in mine. So influencing our children, whether it's good or it's bad, right? We're trying to say it's neither, is sure to come back on us because we've influenced. That's the essence of influencing. That's the point of being a parent. But the idea about how we set them up to come back to us and to bump up against us and to actually work out their own thoughts and their own feelings, they have to push back on every place of influence and fill it with their own more mature, personally vetted thought process. This is where their freedom comes. And it's hard. It's so hard, right? Because we're feeling all of these feelings of the connection and what we want with them. But in truth, what we really want is we want them to get supported in being able to be in life with more of their own truth. So we can focus on the core skills we want to give our children, but those too will ultimately feel in some way dominating to them. They'll have to shake them off, even if they get the skills, like too much, too little, there's no getting it right. So any words that you say as advice are going to be up for grabs. Anything you're not naturally practicing with or modeling, they're going to call you on it and say, hey, that doesn't sync up, because you set them up to have that voice, to have those thoughts, to actually share with you what's going on with them. So we could say it's all bad news, but it's really a mounting argument for shifting how you think about parenting. If we can get straight about this stuff and let go of trying to get it right and help them build the tools to be open and engaged about what they deal with inside of themselves and our parenting relationship with them, then we're working with the truly powerful ingredients to help your child create an incredible and a miraculous lifetime. One that does include a powerful connection to you. And also, you get to evolve more than you ever would have thought possible. So I leave you with some questions about parenting, which is, how will you give them the skills to talk about your relationship with you as they're growing up and once they have? And how do you get committed to work with your own inner child that parallels your real life experience with your child? And will you be open to talking about their truth? And what's that going to take for you to cultivate the skills to listen and to ponder and to process and also share vulnerably in ways that you feel like you can manage? So can you hone your own skills to keep your flashlight on you? And to create a new experiential language to support this different way of relating as if we're students? And the last question is, and I leave you with this thought, how do you arm your child to become free inside of your parenting while still honoring and appreciating you for the gift you've given? So next week, actually, I'm going to pause there for a moment. That's the key. How do you arm your child to have their words, their thoughts, their feelings, to be conscious themselves, and to do it inside of relationship with you, while still honoring and appreciating you for all that you give and all that you bring to parenting. I hope that you have found this hour to take you on a journey of some ups and some downs, but that you end in a place where you think, I can do that. I can create more room. So next week, we'll be taking a ride into the emotion zone, exploring emotions and feelings and the mind struggle to direct the whole show. And we'll probably even touch a little bit on society's kind of viewpoint about emotions and how that's changed. So I hope you'll come back and spend some time with me. I wanted to leave with a poem. I did last week. I thought I would do it again this week. And so this is a poem by Diane Lumens, and it goes like this. If I had my child to raise over again. Hold on, we'll do that again. If I had my child to raise over again, I'd build self-esteem first and the house later. I'd finger paint more and point the finger less. I would do less correcting and more connecting. I'd take my eyes off my watch and watch with my eyes. I would care to know less and know to care more. I'd take more hikes and fly more kites. I'd stop playing serious and seriously play. I would run through more fields and gaze at more stars. I'd do more hugging and less tugging. I'd see the oak tree in the acorn more often. I would be firm less often and affirm much more. I'd model less about the love of power and more about the power of love. I just thought it really did the job from our conversation today, at least that I had planned. And if you'd like a copy of this, it's on my radio show page at samperato.com. And if you'd like to follow along in social media, you can check us out at Expedition Self on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter. Have an awesome day, and thank you for sharing the time with me.